This is Dr. Tim Turlop from Turlop Chiropractic inviting you to join us every Wednesday morning for 30 Minutes to Vitality. Each week we'll be addressing topics that are ultimately important to your health and to mine. Topics about prevention of disease, expressing greater well-being, more mobility, and vitality overall. Join us every Wednesday morning for 30 Minutes to Vitality.
And it is Wednesday morning. It's 11:35. Thanks for joining us. We'll be here till the top of the hour of 12 o'clock, like you just heard from the doctor, Dr. Tim Turlop, Turlop Chiropractic, in the studio with us. Your 30 Minutes to Vitality begins now with Dr. Turlop. Now, remember, you can call in with your questions at 352-796-7272. It's a live show. We'll take those live on the air while Dr. Tim Turlop answers those questions for you here personally. 352-796-7272 or 587-9952. Any one of those will get you through to Dr. Tim Turlop during your 30 Minutes to Vitality. Not only about your vitality, but his as well. He shares his personal experiences with us, and I'm sure he's fully loaded today.
Fully loaded with something, JW. Fully loaded with something.
Always are and always will be. Fully.
So says my mother-in-law.
We always hear either mother-in-law or wife.
So, well, you know, there's a theme that's going on there, I think. Yeah. I think, but I better drop that theme while I still can.
Yeah.
While it's still safe to go home tonight.
Okay.
So it's a good thing. So happy new year once again to everybody.
That's right.
Well, welcome to 2019.
Thank you. It's a great thing.
And so we're here to talk about vitality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how we express greater vitality, how we enjoy greater vitality. And it's all about removing simple interferences. Remembering that the body was created to be self-healing, self-regulating, and to express vitality.
Mm-hmm.
We remove the interferences. Either one, we're getting stuff that doesn't need to be there,
okay. That
we need to get rid of, or we need to add stuff that we're not getting. And if we just do those simple things to remove those interferences, the body will give you vitality.
And what a great way to start off the new year.
It's a great thing.
Yes.
It's really a gift, and it's a good thing. So today we're going to talk a little bit about something. It'll start off and it'll sound a little esoteric, a little out there, a little crazy because it'll have some words that go with it, but we're going to get beyond that.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about something called IGF-1.
Okay.
Right? So IGF-1,
mm-hmm.
which stands for insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1.
Okay.
It's actually got another fancy name. It's called somatomedin C, right? So, yeah. Okay. So there's going to be a quiz on this at the end of the program, everybody. So...
Right. Take notes.
Take notes. Right. So, I mean, but let's just use the IGF-1. All right. Then we'll keep it simple and just call it IGF-1. So, What is this IGF-1?
What is
it? IGF-1 is actually, it's a growth promoter in our bodies.
Okay.
It's really critical to development. It's predominant in mom in the womb. It's super predominant while we're growing as children. Probably the highest levels we get is when we're in puberty.
Okay.
Right. So, when everybody goes through that growth spurt.
Yep.
Right. You know, it hits and you go from, you know, 4'11 to 5'8 in about 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And just go crazy with the growth spurt. Well, IGF-1, this insulin-like growth factor, is significantly responsible for that.
Okay.
It's really tied into something called, people might have heard of HGH.
I was just going to mention, yeah.
Human growth hormone.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, how human growth, I'm not going to get into the physiology of it, but it's significantly tied to IGF-1.
Okay.
And IGF-1 is made in the liver. Human growth hormone comes from the pituitary gland in our brains.
Yep.
Right. And the two work integrally together to actually promote growth. So you'll see these really, the higher the concentrations, you'll see that you'll get bone development, you get muscle development, you get brain development. Everything develops and grows under the effect of IGF-1.
Okay.
And that's what it's supposed to do early in life. And, you know, as we're growing from, you know, little tiny microscopic cells as a baby in mom's womb, et cetera, that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
No, the natural evolution for you and I, and for everybody who's listening, right, is as we age, our HGH levels will start to come down.
Right.
And our IGF-1 levels will start to come down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we see that diminish over time. And that's what it's supposed to do. Studies are actually showing us that IGF-1 levels, as people get much older, the lower that level becomes. Not that we want it to go to zero, because there's balance in everything,
right?
It's not you want to go to zero, but the normal levels of declination where it lowers down normally, right, are actually associated with much longer life, right? We'll see significantly lower levels of IGF-1 in centenarians, people who live to 100 and older.
Yeah.
their levels of IGF-1 have come down significantly later in life.
Makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily a great thing to have it when you're in puberty,
right,
have low levels of
but
IGF-1.
But it can happen.
So it can happen.
Okay.
It does happen.
All right.
But what's interesting, I don't know if you remember, we've previously talked about, it doesn't matter. I mean, it was forever ago.
Okay.
That we mentioned an old study that was when they were looking at protein with rats.
Right.
Right. And they started feeding, they were looking at plant-based proteins and animal-based proteins, and they fed a bunch of rats. Poor rats are always abused, right? And they fed a bunch of rats, a bunch of animal protein. And what they found was that these very immature rats, as they developed, they grew bigger, they got more muscle mass, their fur was much shinier and thicker, and they said, wow, look at this.
Uh-huh.
When you feed this animal protein to these rats, they get healthier and bigger and stronger because we're giving these plant-based proteins to them, and they're smaller, and their muscles aren't as big, and their coats aren't as thick.
Okay.
Right? So the immediate assumption was, hey, you know what?
Animal protein's better.
Animal protein's better.
Right.
Because you get bigger, stronger, and you look better too.
Of course.
But what they didn't do was follow those rats through their 2+ year lifespan to see that the rats that grew bigger, faster, did all that other stuff, also got sicker much earlier, and they had a much shorter lifespan.
Okay.
Right, which is what they didn't see. Now, how is that relative to IGF-1? Because when you look at, you mentioned children with IGF-1 levels that are lower.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there are kids that have not clinically pathological or disease-causing lower levels of IGF-1, but lower levels, guess what? They don't grow as tall.
Okay.
They don't get the muscle bulk. They don't have that maturation that we're seeing. They won't develop the sexual characteristics, secondary sex characteristics, until later, right? So people go, wow, this poor kid isn't delayed onset of puberty.
Everything society tells
us. And this is bad. This is a problem. Well, okay, great. And they get smaller bones, et cetera. What they don't tell you is that kid is much more likely to live a significantly longer life.
Wow.
Right? Because what we know is that those, one of the reasons we're seeing when those, that rat study, we actually saw those rats do that, is because animal-based proteins will markedly spike IGF-1 levels.
Okay.
Right? Which is what is contributing to that proliferation of size and growth and development and all that kind of stuff. So IGF-1 is a good thing at the right times. And we want to see it decline as we age. But what's happening, unfortunately, in our society, and we've known this for quite a long time, actually, is that our IGF-1 levels over the course of the last several decades in the general population are going up and up and up beyond the normal levels, what would be considered to be healthy levels of IGF-1.
Okay.
All right. But why in the heck is that?
Right.
Right. And we'll talk about why that's even a big deal. Right. So one of the things that happens is, we just mentioned how the rats that were given in this study, the animal proteins, and they developed and they matured very, very rapidly, right? It's because of the IGF-1 levels that transpired, right? So we're seeing that. Now, in you and I, if our IGF-1 levels go up, right, it'll create other problems that we'll get into. But it's coming predominantly from animal-based proteins because we're overeating a protein that comes from flesh-based sources, from animal sources.
Yeah.
So, right, and that includes milk.
Yeah,
it includes cheese.
Yeah.
It includes anything. So people go, well, I don't eat red meat. I only eat chicken and fish.
Mm-hmm.
But that protein that's coming from an animal is one of the things that's spiking in. That doesn't mean, again, like I've said 800 times, that we need to be vegetarian, right? But we do, we are in our society, have gotten too much of a good thing, right? Way too much.
Yeah.
I mean, we're broaching almost 50% of our calories coming from animal-based sources on a daily basis.
Now, what about
for the average American?
What about the skeptics that say that, well, I always heard, you know, fish is good for you maybe twice or three times a week, especially a good fatty salmon or tuna or...
And I would concur.
Okay.
Yeah, I would concur.
All right.
Right. But what happens is, and that would be super, and then if you had one serving of something else and everything else was coming from plants.
Cool. Yeah.
I say, you absolutely.
Because I love it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But what happens is, unfortunately, that person who's doing those two or three servings of, let's say, salmon, right?
Right, yeah.
And having a couple servings of salmon a week and maybe an omelet here and,
oh, no,
and had one small steak.
I see.
Great.
Yeah.
And everything else came from plants. That person's not doing that.
Right.
That person sat there with that and then had two glasses of 2% or whole milk, right? And had some cheese that was actually, you know, on top of the salmon, right? And, or had a nice salad, but then covered it with three different types of cheeses.
Right.
And, right? So there's all kinds of other, and it creeps into our diets in all kinds of ways. Mm. And they were in a hurry on the way to work, so they stopped and they got an Egg McMuffin, mm-hmm. right? Which had the sausage patty on top of it and had an egg on it and had cheese on it. So when you stop and you go, what sounds like it's an innocuous thing, simple thing, an Egg McMuffin, for goodness sake, right, is predominantly most of those calories are coming from animal-based sources.
Oh, of course.
Right? And so that's not to sound like, you know, we should all walk around in organic cotton and not shave, right? But the research is showing that we're getting too much of a good thing, far too much. And these levels of IGF-1 are elevating, and then they're creating problems in our body. So what problems does this create?
Well, inflammation is always number one.
Oh, you've been listening. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Right? So, right, inflammation is a significant problem with elevated levels of IGF-1. Now, IGF-1 being a promoter of growth of cells, and almost any cell, right, one of the things that happens is you and I on a day-to-day basis, right now as I'm sitting here speaking with you, right, one of the things that we have is I probably have some cellular damage that's happening in my body, and I've got all these cool repair mechanisms that help to repair that damage. Mm-hmm. But if my IGF-1 levels are elevated, those cells that got damaged, which normally would have been cleaned up, destroyed, and eliminated,
right,
all of a sudden get stimulated to grow and replicate.
Oh.
Because my IGF-1 levels are higher.
Okay.
So now all of a sudden cells that really should never have survived are not only allowed to survive, but then to thrive. And so when I get that DNA damage and I get cellular replication, what do I get? Cancer, right?
Right.
Tumors.
That's right.
Nasty stuff. Mm. So one of the biggest things that we see IGF-1 levels associated with is markedly escalated levels of cancer.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So as we actually look at, and we've all heard about the war on cancer, right? Been going on for 60 years. Mm. And unfortunately, we ain't winning, right? It's pretty much static. There are one or two cancers for various reasons that we actually are seeing some improvement in, right? But other than that, it's done. Forget it. It's the same survival rate as it was 60 years ago and about $60 billion
ago.
They
may have come out with a new pill or something, but that's about it.
Yeah. So yeah, the survival rates are not significantly improved. But we're seeing in the same time span, we're also seeing this increase in the consumption of animal products. I won't mention one specific pizza chain, but because of like pizza and the explosion of pizza delivery and all that stuff, right? And I forget how many billions of pounds of cheese from 30 years that the consumption of cheese went up in a 25-year period of time. It went up like 18-fold.
Oh.
Just cheese.
Wow.
Right? In a 25-year period of time. 18 times.
And most of it processed.
And the dairy farmers are digging it.
Yeah.
Right? But it's... You watch that. We watch the meat consumption, which is significantly increased.
Yeah.
And we see blood studies are now showing us that IGF-1 levels in the average American are also elevated. So we had this war on cancer. We've got all this stuff going on with IGF-1 significantly elevated, and it's inducing cancers in us. So can it induce breast cancer?
Well, sure.
Research is very clear. Prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Yep. Lung cancer? How about even people think, well, come on, a melanoma? Can a melanoma? I thought that was just from sun.
Right.
Well, guess what? I mean, most people, more than 50% of melanomas happen in parts of the body where there's been no sun exposure.
Yeah, that's right.
So you go, right? And so what is helping to induce that is this IGF-1 level, which it's really kind of epidemic. Huh. It's not a small problem. It's a big deal. How about associations with Alzheimer's disease?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. So early death, but also we're seeing markedly elevated IGF-1 levels in people who have cognitive deficits and disorders, right? It's also doing that because, again, with the proteins, right, that deposition and plaquing from different types of proteins, the amyloid button, all that kind of stuff that happens with that is actually induced and proliferated by IGF-1 elevation.
Now, I don't know about the rest of the listeners, but for myself personally, this is the first time I've heard of IGF-1.
You got it. IGF-1. Yeah.
IGF-1. First time I've ever heard of
it. Insulin-like growth factor 1. Yeah. And we've known about it for a long time.
I know.
Well, even since the 90s, JW, we've actually had oh, forgive me, I don't know the exact number of drugs, but there's been a couple of hundred studies and research done because they're developing and have developed some pretty successful drugs that are IGF-1 inhibitors that are they're chemotherapy drugs. Mm-hmm. And what do they specifically do? Target IGF-1.
Yeah, right.
And then cell types that have receptors for it, and even some of the tumors are creating more IGF-1. And the stuff, not only does it actually let those cells grow and replicate, it actually then stimulates further accessorizing its growth. Mm-hmm. It's a fancy thing called angiogenesis, the blood vessels that will grow into those tumors more. Mm-hmm. It does everything to promote cancer development. Yeah. Not good. Right. So we want to make sure that we're actually paying attention to this and seeing it. And again, I say it again because there are times, trust me, I've been doing this for 30 years.
Oh, I know.
And when we talk about with this patient, sometimes they look at me and they go, so what, you want me to like give up meat? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
And I'll say it again. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. But we have just gone so far this direction.
Yeah.
Too far,
the extreme,
that we need to dial it back, right, and limit that consumption of animal-based products because of what's happening with IGF-1 levels. It's really quite frightening when we see that happening. So we see that happening with longevity. We know that lower levels actually expand our life. We see that, you mentioned inflammation. Mm-hmm. It brings that down. It eliminates many diseases that we'll see that we might call age-related diseases. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily age-related diseases at all.
Cool.
Right? And part of them is coming from this sort of dietary, can I call it excess?
Yeah.
Where we're doing it. And then we grow up in it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the joke about how do you boil a live frog?
Right, yeah.
Well, you put it in your room temperature water and you gradually turn up the temperature because it doesn't even know that the water is getting, because it just got used to it, didn't know. So my children, if I bring them up where it's just, this is how you eat and what they just, they perceive that as what's normal, right? So we have pizza 4 days a week and you have, you know, a Big Mac 3 days a week and an Egg McMuffin 2 days a week. And on Saturdays we go out and we have, you know, six strips of bacon and a 3-egg omelet with cheese. And that's what we do on Sunday mornings after church. And it's just, the kids don't know.
Right.
And we didn't know. It's been each generation kind of successively as we've enjoyed great affluence in our country. Thank God, right? But this kind of generational creep where we don't know because we're the frog in the water and the temperature gradually goes up.
True.
And it's not a fault-finding mission. It's not finger-wagging mission. It's just what is. This is the reality of it. And we just need to make sure that people who are listening grab that.
Yeah.
And can appreciate that. Because sometimes as we get really far along with a patient in care and we'll start talking about this because can it then lead... Can this excess animal protein consumption cause one of my patients who has lumbar low back degenerative disc disease? Can it actually cause that over time to actually be worse? Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're in that person's coming in for wellness care or whatever, and we start talking about this. They go, how does that relate to that? I don't understand.
Well, it's something I don't have to look forward to as I get older, right? I mean, I don't have to look forward to that.
Yeah.
The age-related diseases, I don't have to look forward to that.
So, correct.
Because I can stop that.
We can stop
yeah.
it. Yeah. Right? And we can retard it.
Yeah, right.
So this is one of the things that we look at that we want to make sure that we get. It's interesting because some of the things like with the rat study where we thought, oh, they're bigger, stronger, more beautiful coats. Oh, yeah. It seems like obvious. It's like the correlation between IGF-1 and human growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, human growth hormone also declines over time. Yep. So there was a period of time where many physicians thought, well, if it decreases, well, if we increase growth hormone, then that will be like an anti-aging because we're aging because we don't have growth hormone. Mm-hmm. Well, what we found out was, that's supposed to decline. And if you increase it, you're going to increase rates of cancer. You're going to increase cardiovascular disease.
Wow.
And you're going to increase mortality dying from any cause.
Yeah.
By using growth hormone, by elevating levels to what we'd call, say, pre-aging, if I'm a 60, 65-year-old guy, and I take it back to my levels when I was 35, we go, well, then I'll enjoy the vitality of when I was 35, right?
That's
no,
what they tell you.
You're going to get sick and you're going to die.
Wow.
Right? So we don't do that anymore.
No.
Right? We learned that lesson. Unfortunately, guess who we experimented on? Yeah, you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? Right? To find out, to go, oh, so we don't, there's that balance there. So human growth hormone, right, is not something we want to supplement with, nor do we want more IGF-1.
Mm.
Right now,
right.
IGF-1, is it sometimes even used for a child? We mentioned delayed onset. If they're markedly delayed and we find they've got IGF-1 paucity, do we actually have synthetic IGF-1 that's actually given to kids for developmental reasons if they're seriously inhibited?
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay. So it can be used. It's learning the balance of when it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not so good.
So there is actually value to it.
Oh, IGF-1, it's supposed to be there. We cannot live without it.
Well, I mean, as far as like creating, or like you said, giving it to children in some form or another, or because of certain diseases.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, and if we look at it again, there's a couple of dwarfism.
Uh-huh.
Right? Would be that poor kid who's got, with IGF-1 levels, they'll be significantly depleted, as will human growth hormone and dwarfism.
All right.
Right? If we have acromegaly. Right. If you think of Andre the Giant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
And it was like a Jaws from the 007 movies.
Right. Right.
Right. Riker. Those guys had acromegaly.
Right.
Right. So it's a disease where we have excess human growth hormone and consequently IGF-1 levels.
Uh-huh.
And they get it. So both of those disorders are associated with a shorter lifespan.
That's true.
Yeah, right. That's right. Significantly lower lifespan. Right. But then if we look at Laronz syndrome. Which is actually, it's where the body is not receptive to IGF-1 and human growth hormone. The receptors aren't getting it.
Mm.
Well, guess what? Well, it's still there, and the body it's not receiving it and then being stimulated accordingly. Those people enjoy very long life, right?
Yeah.
If they don't have something happen like a drug accident.
Right, right.
Right? They enjoy very long life.
Okay.
Because their body, while the levels of IGF-1 and human growth hormone are there, right, the receptors aren't actually being stimulated because of the disease.
Okay.
Right, but they actually enjoy a long life.
Okay.
Interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So too much, too little, mm-hmm. not so good. But if it's there, and then the body again gives you that long life. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Very interesting. So do we see this associated with then like hyperinsulinemia and insulin receptivity in the cells? Absolutely, which is like we're talking about.
Tied to.
Yeah, talking about diabetes, right?
Yeah.
Essentially. So can IGF-1 levels be responsible for decreased receptivity on the cells to both insulin and glucose?
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yep.
Yep.
Right? So if I go, how about cardiovascular disease? Do people who actually die of a heart attack, when we measure their blood postmortem, will we see typically almost always elevated IGF-1 levels?
No, I'm sure.
Yeah, we do. Right. And we tend not to see it in people who don't have heart disease. We see more normal IGF-1 levels as well. So this is why I'm going through all this to make sure that we kind of grab it and why it's critical.
Yeah.
To understand, right, that we want to make sure that we just decrease that consumption. So having a glass of milk, I had to laugh. I had to take my kid to college and my wife and I stopped by a coffee place.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her, I said, you know what? We're not on holiday, but by gosh, I'm going to have a coffee with a little milk thing in it. I normally don't do that.
Right.
I almost do no dairy.
Yeah.
Right. And I said, now I'm going to shoot the works and just get a little skim milk and have them froth that up a little bit and put that back. That's a treat while I'm on holiday. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And did it. And I said, can I have skim milk, please, or low fat? And she goes, low fat? I go, yeah. She goes, okay, 2%. And I went, 2%. 2% milk is still like 40% milk fat, for God's sake. And I was like, going, really? You're calling that low fat? It was just a kind of a crazy thing because we're consuming the dairy. We think certain things about it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just not true.
True, right.
It's just not true.
Wow.
So even low fat milk still has the same levels of that protein in it.
That's right.
Right? So we can go, I drink skim milk. Okay, well, the fat content is decreased, but the level of animal-based protein is the same.
Yeah.
So the answer is just decrease the consumption of it overall.
Now, there's plant-based milks as well, like rice and soy and almond. And,
so, almond is probably the healthy of that bunch.
Is it?
Coconut water can actually be quite helpful as well. Cashew milk can be quite good as well. But almond is probably the safest bet if you're going to do one of those milks. And an unsweetened one, if you can. A little vanilla in it or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's an unsweetened one. That's a nice milk substitute. Yeah. That tastes pretty great and can be actually quite a nice replacement for regular milk. So that's really the long and the short in this short program of about IGF-1 and its metabolism and the risk that we run by elevating it when we eat way too much animal-based protein.
So one more thing I got to add to my blood panel, and you do that at Turlip Chiropractic,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
You check all those levels.
We can check all those things,
yeah.
No question about it.
So how can folks get in touch with you and sign up for that?
Well, our office phone is 352-666-2222. You can find us at 8466 Northcliff Boulevard right off US 19 or on the web at drterlep.com.
And they're located in Spring Hill right off of Northcliff Boulevard, just a little east of US 19. Very simple to find. Give them a call today, Turlip Chiropractic. And as far as your 30 minutes to vitality, well, we'll see you again next Wednesday, 11:30 to 12.
See you then. Thanks so very much.